Welcome back to Anime is Lit. I'm Danny, and this is part two of our Mob Psycho 100 podcast. So if you missed part one of our discussion, stop now and go back for that one first. This time we'll get into some of the show's philosophy and Twitter Q&A if you were waiting for that. So enjoy the last half of our talk. Here we go. Maybe this can kind of lead into what you want to talk about, Subs. I think one of the main themes we didn't touch on as much that is more a part of season one, at least explicitly, is that theme of specialness.
Yeah, I think, like, I touched on this earlier, but I guess we'll reiterate it, that this idea of everyone is not special, which is a mouthful for me to say, that it's just that no one is special insofar as they should be sort of placed above anyone else in a hierarchy. Like, I think that's it, right? Is that the show is saying that while everyone is unique, like, everyone in another very deep and true sense is actually equal, again, in that they all have this full and deep humanity that deserves dignity and deserves full recognition on our part, whether or not they have the psychic powers. And Mob, in some ways, from the very beginning, kind of is led to feel that through, like, what he's taught by Reagan. Like, Reagan is actually a really great advocate for this idea. And then he really, I think, of his own choice and volition, like, really grasps onto it as, like, a truth about the world and fights for that and really lives that out in a really radical sort of way. That I think, like, I understand where people are coming from and you guys are coming from when you talk about the show maybe being a little bit naive when it comes to its morality. But I think I kind of see it differently. I sort of see it as actually really radical in some of its seemingly simple solutions, but actually, like, again, just really extreme and really setting out a difficult way to live, a way that can be quite hard at times.
It certainly is a difficult way to live. You're right about that part. I think it takes a lot I don't know, but it certainly takes a lot of effort to live the way that I think the show is saying is the right way to live, or just like a good way to live, I guess.
It's a pretty deep compassion, I think.
It's an incredibly deep compassion, and I don't think that the whole, like, the specialness related stuff in the show is necessarily what is particularly naive about it. I think that's actually I love the anti-hierarchical. I agree with you that that's a pretty radical thing, especially when you think about the fact that one is Japanese and lives in Japan, one of the most hierarchical ordered societies in the world. Like, it is extremely radical to be, like, you know, against, you know, like a stratified society, for whatever reason, you know, be it, you know, for actual societal and political reasons or because you have psychic powers. Like, it's, you know, it's all, you know, in service of the same message. But yeah, I don't know, like, far be it
from me.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, and I don't even, you know, now that I am thinking about it, I don't even know if the idea of the show is that we're all meant to be like Mob, or that he's just sort of like the idealized sort of version of what a good human life is, morally speaking.
I think in terms of specialness, I like looking at the lyrics from the first OP where it says, if everyone is not special, maybe you can be what you want to be. It's more like, if you realize that you don't have to become better than other people or, like, stand out in order to be like them, maybe you can just be yourself and, like, be happy not being special. It's like more that's how you find, like, the good things in life and, like, happiness, rather than, like, is that morally right to be, like, unique?
Being yourself
rather than, like, some sort of achievement.
And, like, once you stop concerning yourself with deriving happiness from, like, your, I guess, sort of domination of others, you can focus on trying to find happiness within yourself.
Like how Reagan is just the, like, like picture of mediocrity.
Yeah.
But he's at his happiest when he's just being like extremely himself,
mm-hmm.
and instead of like trying to be better than other people or get more recognition.
And I think I have an idea of what I want to say. I hope it makes sense. Gonna try to phrase this half-baked, maybe.
Go for it.
Idea. Mm-hmm. That like Reagan is, I think, sort of exists between two extremes presented in the show. Like, we have, you know, Mob, innocent for a large part of the show, who is compassionate, radically empathetic, totally giving of himself.
Like, selfless to a fault.
Yes. And we have, like, the rest of the adults who are, like, you know, wanting to, like, use up everyone else for their own benefit. Like, they totally objectify everyone and, like, all people are tools, people are things to, like, sort of achieve, their means to achieve the ends that I, the adult bad person, want to achieve. But Reagan is kind of between those two, and I think there's a really cool part in season one at the end where he uses what he knows about kind of hierarchy and how people are obsessed with that and how people want to use each other to get ahead. He uses that, the appeal of that, to push other people toward a better way of living. The way he gets the claw kids out of the organization by saying things like, you know, if you want to make it big, you have to do it the right way. Mm-hmm. Like, or if you'll never make it big if you die here, like in this fucking pit with these losers. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like telling them a lie to like push them towards what is ultimately the truth, right? Yeah. Like, because they don't want to hear the truth, that sometimes people are just not in a position where they want to hear it. They're not ready for it, or they're not listening. And so, you know, he uses what appeals to them and their way of living, again, to get them out of harm's way and to set them hopefully on a good path to a brighter future. And so it shows that he like cares about them. And like, yeah, I just, that character is so unique as an anti-hero because he lives between those two spaces. Like, he's not innocent like Mob. He is experience, right? He's lost that. But he also has not lost respect for the humanity in others. He likes helping people. He cares about other people genuinely and their futures. Despite, you know, being this flawed guy who also still, you know, wants to make a living and does it by conning other people.
Yeah.
You know, he may be helping them. Like, he may be actually sending away most of the people that he works with happier. But, you know, he's, again, not really dealing in the truth. So he's just such a fascinating guy.
I think so, too. One thing I thought about in our rewatch today was, like, when Reagan confronts Suzuki and they have kind of a comparison moment where, like, you realize that both of them use people,
mm-hmm.
like, primarily. Like, Reagan is a con man, and he does con people for his living. Like, he
even
also
Suzuki
uses Mob.
Is like, ah, so you too trick people.
Yeah, he's like, that's your deal. So and like, it's true if you think, like, as much as we're like, oh, but like, he really likes Mob, so it's fine. Like, he does use Mob the whole time. He's using him like for his job, and like, he's kind of conning Mob the whole time too. And like,
well, that's a question for you. Do you think it is use if the other person willingly is choosing it?
Yes. That's too simple of a question, I think. Because, like, I mean, Serizawa also chose to be used.
Yeah.
In a very, like, manipulated situation. And then
realized he chose poorly. I think Mob told him, right? He chose poorly, but did Mob choose poorly?
That's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
He certainly doesn't think he did, because like, so what he says to, he tells Serizawa, right? Like, you chose to follow the wrong person. Like, you're hurting people, mm-hmm. you're doing violence, it's bad. But then after Reagan, like, for a long time, I thought watching the show that Mob was totally ignorant mm-hmm. and thought Reagan actually did have spiritual powers. They mm-hmm. bought all the excuses that he was totally being, like, he'd bought hook, line, and sinker into Reagan's stuff. But, like, when he, after the press conference where mm-hmm. Reagan is sort of exonerated, I guess, and they have that moment, and Reagan says, hey, like, he's totally vulnerable with Mob for a second. It's like, did you know all along?
Oh, yeah.
And he says, mm-hmm. yeah, all along I knew it, that my master was a great guy. But, like, that is sort of masking over he knows everything about Reagan being a fake psychic, and he still chose to stay with him because of, like, all the good things he did for Mob. But also, Mob would leave if Reagan did bad things to other people.
Yes. Yeah. I think that is the difference. Mm-hmm. There, even the episode before that one, Mob has a moment where he's like, he even says, I can't remember if he says it to his face, but he goes, like, I'm starting to think that all the things you say aren't necessarily true. Yep.
He does say it to his face. Yeah. And, like, yeah, it was, like, that episode, like, Reagan treated him very poorly and he did leave. And
he sure did.
Yeah. Because, like, well, for one thing, Reagan has been kind of slowly teaching him to think for himself in a mm-hmm, way, mm-hmm. even though he's still being conned.
Yeah.
Like, but he's been teaching him to, like, make his own decisions to, like, serve himself in a healthy way, and he turns it right back on him, and he's like, actually, I don't need to do what you're telling me, because that's not how I see myself.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think that is the clear difference between him and Serizawa, where Serizawa gives up all of his thinking.
It also
Reagan taught him too well. It's like, oh no, you actually are becoming self-reliant.
Yeah.
No.
I think.
Oh, but you still want to hang out because we're actually friends. Sorry, Mark. Go ahead.
No, it's fine. I think it also gets into, like, later on, I think it also gets into, part of the reason that Mob keeps coming around is because he senses a vulnerability in Reagan without him there. I think he likes and respects Reagan enough to know that when he's calling Mob for a job, Reagan, being a fucking idiot, can get himself into a situation that if Mob wasn't there, he could get seriously hurt. Now, that never happens, because that's just, like, the nature of Reagan's character is that his luck is just
so
the
lucky.
Most comical, like, fucking reverse Mr. Magoo I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, just, yeah, just the most stupidly lucky character on Earth. But also, yeah, I think Mob does know, especially once the acknowledgement's been made that Mob has known, you know, I think there's the implication that Mob has known for at least quite some time, if not the entire time, that Reagan didn't have powers.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, there is that knowledge that, like, oh, God, like, if I'm not there to bail Master out of this one, then he could get seriously hurt, and then that's going to be on me because I've agreed to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But going off of what you were saying, Subs, about, like, are you being used if you agree to it? I would ask, what exactly do people think they're agreeing to? Mm-hmm. Because I think, you know, I think what people that walk into Reagan's office think they're agreeing to is definitely different than what's actually going on, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I was only talking about Mob.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, too, is that I think what Mob agreed to is definitely different than what ended up happening, right?
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
But that's the other thing is, like, you know, then you have to start thinking about, like, you know, how much is a child that young, you know, how young Mob was when he started hanging out with Reagan, like, how capable is a child like that of giving consent?
Mm-hmm.
You know, morally and ethically, and, you know, within the bounds of the law, it's, like, you know, different everywhere. But I think we could probably all agree that, like, yeah, what Mob probably thought he was agreeing to at the time is not at all what he got. But he stuck around because, yeah, A, you know, he he was growing and learning lessons from Reagan. And then eventually, yeah, he started realizing, like, oh shit, if I stop showing up, Reagan is going to get like seriously hurt or in trouble or, you know, whatever other thing. Because yeah, it's like, I like that role reversal of like, eventually mob starts being the responsible one in the situation.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I think by the time the show starts, mob understands, like, I think he gets it. I don't think he's being suckered in any way. So I think, like, and he's free to leave whenever, as as we see, like, he can just walk out at any point. So I think, like, I think I would question whether or not throughout the show's run, like, it's necessarily fair to say, like, he's being used. I mean, if he's being used, I mean, I don't know. I think the show might even be saying something about, like, the way that we interact with each other on a really regular basis most of the time is just to use each other.
I do think that there are moments where it within the show where Reagan does take advantage of Mob's goodwill, but I don't think that that characterizes the entire nature of their relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there are definitely moments where Reagan on screen uses Mob, but it's, you know, how much of that is just part of the relationship they have is, you know, pretty variable and, and, you know,
yeah, well, I mean, and he's like, you know, when he calls him all the time, eventually, like, Mob will put his foot down, right? Like,
yeah,
stop this mess. But, like, that, clearly, that's, like, I feel like that's all relationships. I don't think there's anything special about the way Reagan oversteps the bounds there. Like, I think a lot of people want to characterize a relationship as some sort of, is a sort of child abuse situation. And I just think it's not that. I think it's a pretty sort of more of a universal kind of relationship.
Well, the only thing that I would maybe challenge you on there is Mob's pay.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Labor.
Always characterized as really dismal. And I definitely don't really think that Mob Psycho as a show really ever takes a stance on, like, capitalism and, like, workers' rights and, like, that sort of thing. But, like,
well, if it's anti-hierarchy, I think you could...
You could definitely
tie that together.
Yeah, you could certainly make an argument, but, like, it's really only ever used as, like, sort of a sprinkle on top of, like, the massive cake of Mob and and Reagan's relationship. It's never made, like, a problem. But, like, I think me being as concerned with that stuff as I am in my life, like, it is kind of shitty that Reagan pay him right well.
Yeah.
When he clearly is making money. Like,
yeah. Well, if you're arguing that, like, all internships are ethically problematic, I'm with you. I just think that's what it is. It's just a Ghostbuster internship.
Yeah, for sure.
That is something I want to come back
to
later.
God, fuck,
but
they are Ghostbusters, aren't they? God damn it.
They are.
That's, fuck off.
That's I hear we're taking
this show is bad now.
We're taking out the plot summary that we did and we're replacing it with the phrase Ghostbusters internship.
That's
we're
the
just
title
gonna
of this
say
episode
who you gonna call
the anime.
Yes.
I am gonna come back to Reagan and Mob's relationship, but not until after we hit on the, like, psychic power allegory. We needed to get to that, but we don't have to go there just yet. If you had some more to say, Subs.
Oh, I mean, do we want to talk about, like, the show's idea of, like, goodness?
Yeah.
I think we're kind of there. We're talking about, like, yeah, we're kind of talking about, like, is Reagan a good person or not? Maybe we can kind of take it from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So this, the question about Reagan being a good person is very, like, totally fair question. And I think trying to figure that out for me, like, led to me sort of thinking about, like, what the greater messages of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we talk about, like, is someone good, there's a lot of ways to evaluate that. Like, and I think a lot of those frameworks kind of don't suit this show, actually. A lot of those frameworks will loop Mob into the not good crowd because they're more sort of absolutist than others. Mm-hmm. Like, just to give a quick rundown in for like traditional kind of ethical theories, these are the ones that I think actually don't apply to the show. So you have like divine command theory, which is like pretty rare, I think, in real life, like where those people that are divine command theorists think like whatever God, or, you know, might not even be the Christian God, whoever their supreme being is, whatever they say is right and wrong is wrong. Even if they said 2 + 2 = 5, that will be correct, and so on and so forth.
I mean, I can think of a few in my personal life, but go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, no, for sure. It's a pretty naive, I think, kind of ethic. Then you have some more kind of common modern ones like utilitarianism, which there's a lot of different forms of it, but kind of the baseline idea would be, right, that what is good is the act that brings the most, like, the greatest net amount of happiness to the most people.
I think Mob Psycho is firmly not that.
Yeah,
not at all. I think Mob doesn't, would sort of see that as dehumanizing. Like, oh, these people are happiness sponges. Like, that's not how we should think about people. Yeah. And then you have deontological ethics, which are more common, and they're a pretty modern sort of invention, relatively speaking. Pretty popular one, like Immanuel Kant, Kantian ethics. And basically, with deontological ethical systems, like, you have introduced into the idea of morality this notion of right. Like, pre all that stuff, pre-utilitarianism and pre-deontological ethics, you have, like, the Greeks talking about the good, and it's not quite right to, like, equate what, like, Greek philosophers say is the good with the right. Like, the good is kind of the spectrum thing, right? And the idea is to, like, cultivate human flourishing, and the good, again, yeah, is just a sort of moral spectrum that our actions exist on and are striving to. And deontological ethics would say things like, you know, actions are right or wrong, sort of, and you can put things into those two camps, you know, when, and you have, like, I don't know, the Ten Commandments maybe would be like the rule of right and wrong. Kant has a thing that's kind of like the golden rule, but subtly different, that, like, the only right action is the action that you would will to be universal law.
Wow.
It's subtly distinct. Yeah, it's subtly distinct from do unto others in some ways that are not worth going into.
So it's like a completely objective right?
Yeah, very much so.
Interesting.
Not a lot of wiggle room in stuff like that.
It's a tough one.
But I think those kind of frameworks have, like, a first philosophy in common that's either, like, starts with epistemology or metaphysics, like, and assumes, like, me, the lone subject, like, what can I know? Like, what is the world like? Let me see. Yeah. Let me figure that out. And I think, like, that is not the first philosophy of Mob Psycho 100.
It's based on understanding how the entire world works.
I think, like, the person that I think is an exponent of what this show is sort of about would be this Jewish philosopher and rabbi called Martin Buber, who's an early 20th century philosopher, and he's an existentialist and also a theist. He's Jewish. And his first philosophy, the thing that he takes as a given, is relation. And he says, like, that there's two sort of primary modes of human experience. Kind of the world of experiencing things, me experiencing objects, and then the world of relations. And the world of me doing things with objects and using things, there's two word pairs to characterize these things. And the world of objects and people, he sort of denotes that as I, it. And then the world of relation, he denotes as I, thou, or I, you. And I think that this show takes relation as given and takes relationships as, like, this primary and important idea. So, like, in I, Thou, Buber is all about relation and encounter. Thinks, like, real relation is about, like, reciprocity. It is about, I've mentioned this before, but it's about a humanity recognizing and dignifying another humanity and existing in kind of a, like, a hyper-fluctuating present with the other person. And it's a lot of highfalutin language, but as I read it, I start to think, like, this is kind of what some of the more transcendent experiences of my life have felt like when I'm in relationship with other people.
I agree, yeah.
And we can't live in that world all the time. Like, that would be, I think that would be too exhausting. And so we sometimes sort of intentionally click out of that sort of vulnerability and openness. And we, again, live in this, like, objectifying kind of sort of always the past world of I, it. Like, always kind of data extraction and experience that way, like means, ends, instrumentality. And I think, yeah, I mean, and so I mentioned before Reagan living kind of between two worlds. I think there's a part of him that is, through Mob, he has kind of started to move towards, like, genuine relation, like genuine I-thou relationships, and being open to that. But I mean, he's not fully there. I think he still uses people, still thinks about them that way, but oftentimes he doesn't. And I think he wants to again move in that better direction that he, I mean, by the end of the show, you know, he feels a lot of responsibility for Mob, but he recognizes him as, like, wow, like, this person is, like, is good. This is such a good person. And I think that's why that, like, you know, and he says, like, Mob's, he tells the group, like, Mob's greatest strength isn't his psychic power, it's his ability to communicate. It's his ability to tell someone exactly how he feels, and that can disarm anyone. So it's his, like, ability to enter into, like, real genuine relation with other people. And I think when he says to Suzuki, winning and losing is not the be-all and end-all of relationships, keyword, I think he's, like, suggesting, starting to suggest another way for him to live. And not in the world of I-it, right? Not in the means, ends, seeing people as means, seeing encounters as a matter of winning and losing. But to, like, say, hey, like, there's this other dimension to life. And that's how you kind of be a good person. And so this is what I think, like, after giving it a lot of thought, what the sort of core, doesn't sound very much like an ethic. It sounds sort of like a metaphysic, but I think it's hard to, like, separate these things sometimes. This is what I think, like, the, this is what I think, like, the kind of moral, the morality of the show, and why I think, like, I use words like radical about it, because, like, after reading I, Thou, it's a thing, like, it changed me. And it's a thing I'm trying to apply in my life, but it's really hard to do. And I think, this is the suggestion of the show, like, that this is a good way to live. This is the right thing to do, is bold. And this is what I think it's doing. And so, is Reagan good? Like, I think he's, like, gesturing towards it. And I think, like, we kind of all are Reagan in that way. We're, none of us are Mob. We're all kind of trying to do our best and move in that way, but we're pulled back in the I-it direction by a myriad things. Life is hard. So I think Reagan is, I think Mob is right that he's genuinely, like, deep down, he has good intentions.
I think it's really interesting question asking whether or not Reagan is good, because I think it forces you to think about how purposeful, like, how much is Reagan trying to be good versus how much is just the way he is good? Because to me, Reagan always comes across as a character who just is kind of doing him. Mm-hmm. You know, like he's always just doing what he's doing. And that's just him. Like there's very little, there's so many characters in Mob that are trying desperately to do something. Reagan never really seems like he's trying. He just seems like he's just doing everything. And that's just who he is as a person. Mm-hmm. So I feel like almost, yeah, he's incredibly, well, he's authentic in certain respects, but he's incredibly inauthentic in his interactions with so many people. But there is a certain measure of authenticity to that too. Mm-hmm. That is, you know, as much an authentic part of his personality and who he is as a person than as anybody else in the show. But yeah, I think it's interesting that like, you know, I can't point to a specific moment where I was like, oh yeah, Reagan was really making a conscious choice here. Like it was just like, he's just kind of doing what he does, but what he does happens to be just pure insanity most of the time. Like just a complete, like full notch on the stupid bastard meter, like mixed with insane luck and, like the most crazy amount of street smarts anyone could possibly have.
Yes.
I think certainly all that is accurate, but like, I mean, I think he does assert himself at times. We've talked about like when he wants to protect Mob's innocence and like the episode 11, I think of season one where Mob is about to kill someone. And Reagan grabs his face and says, no, you'll be hurt in the end. It's fucking powerful shit. It really got me. And then he gets cut, seemingly in the back. Mm-hmm. And you can argue, I guess, that the next episode negates the gravity of that moment. But you can't kill Reagan. That'd be terrible. but yeah, like there's these moments when he does that. And then there's moments when that kind of desire on his part to be responsible for Mob and help direct him to what he sees as good, like ultimately good anyway, like whether or not that's bound up with his own self-interest or not, which most of the time it is, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Like it can be bad. Like the reason he's so shitty to Mob, that time that forces them to break apart is like he's ultimately I think he wants to keep him around, and yes, like he wants to reap the benefits of actual Esper being with him, but I think there's a part of him that wants to keep him from getting hurt by other people, because he's seen him get hurt before, and that
shit definitely sucks. You could definitely argue that it's very easy to see that Reagan does care about Mob, because like really the only time he ever demonstrates like true thought out intentionality is when he's doing something in service of trying to help Mob. That's like and it's not to say that he doesn't like think through actions, but like the vast majority of the times that you see, you hear Reagan's internal monologue, or you hear him hear him like calculating out a move, is when he's trying to help or defend or lecture or do something else that is eventually going to be in service to, you know, protect Mob.
Mm-hmm. Man, Subs, I really like you kind of explaining that theory, because I think whether we can pinpoint exactly where Reagan falls on that kind of spectrum, I think that the two contrasting ideas, like with the I-it and the I-thou, I think that is really just kind of a idea that the whole show sets forth, just especially on the I-thou one being more important than people think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that interpersonal thing has a lot more to say about your kind of values and your ideas about morality than sometimes the I-it stuff.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think like it may sort of sound like to some people that I am bending over backwards to exonerate bad behavior of Reagan. and I mean, I think he does some shitty things unquestionably, but I guess I am of a mind, especially like when it comes to fiction, I think and the real world too at times is like judging kind of morality of an individual kind of based on their moral community and their epistemic community, so their world. And I think the world of Mob Psycho we have established is fucked up. Like, the adults are so bad. They're all terrible. The fact that you have a guy who actually cares about these kids, all the kids, right? Like, and isn't always trying to, like, get them to use up every bit of their potential for his own power and glorification all of the time, like, is, like, it puts him, like, way ahead of everyone except for, like, the Kageyama parents, pretty much.
Yeah, I was about to say, Mob's parents are basically the only other adults in that world that are, like, implicitly good people.
I really like his parents.
They're cool.
They're very good parents. And I can always really appreciate a good pair of anime parents because
Yeah.
Like,
they're rare, a rare breed.
Yeah, for real.
I just about his parents really quick. I love how nonchalant they are about the fact that they're both their children have insane psychic powers and they're just like, this again? Oh my goodness.
Yeah, they're just like, they just want them to stop bending spoons all the time.
The dad.
I think it's so grounding.
He's
it's
at
so
that
funny.
Age.
Because, like, I mean, it's like, it's just like a cute little snapshot of, like, if you have extraordinary circumstances in your family or just like crazy situations that other people would make a huge deal out of, it's kind of really grounding sometimes to just treat it like it's
one is so good at that immaculate. Oh my god. Also, does it seem like they eat enchiladas an awful lot?
They're like more than anyone.
I thought it was Alma Rice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no. Anime enchiladas.
Oh shit, is this the new calling onigiri donuts?
This is.
It just looked like enchiladas with red
I'm
sauce.
So calling it that from now on.
Yeah. Oh, that's really fucking funny.
Someone revealing cultural ignorance. It's what I do. I love
it. It's like the same colors scheme, I think.
I can
nothing in that show is the right shape. It's all blobby.
That is true. This is completely apropos of nothing, but Kat, our friend, at least me, Danny, and Kay's friend, and star graphic designer of just about everything that actually looks good related to Ono anime. She once described the show's aesthetic as sort of like one quarter anime, three quarter 90s era classy Kasupo cartoon. And when I say classy Kasupo cartoon, I mean like Rugrats and All Real Monsters. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I really, especially All Real Monsters really got me because like the design aesthetic of all the evil spirits and like even like the kind of sort of sketchy way the characters are designed is like. Mm-hmm. I'd be remiss if I didn't bring that up at least once, even though it was like not at all relating to anything that we're talking about right now. Like,
you may really, not believe me, but I was talking to someone about Ah Real Monsters this very day.
This is pure synergy then, because
that's fantastic. Yeah. We actually got a Twitter Monsters... question exactly about that. Not the show, but about the 90s aesthetic.
Yeah.
And whether it was intentional or not. I think you're right.
Yeah, well, are we actually going to be getting to that at some point? Because I'll save it then if we're getting to it.
No, can we can.
You can mention it right now. Yeah. We can come back to other Twitter questions later. But that was by at Robot Sweater Rudy. He just said, "Do you think the style and color schemes dynamic is intentionally reminiscent of 90s era graphics? Maybe that's just my millennial idealism, but something about the show feels oddly nostalgic, and I think that's true."
Yeah, I think it's true too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that factors really, really heavily into what I was saying when I was talking about the production, about how they're very concertedly trying to buck current trends. Mm-hmm. But I would argue that the show is a lot less emblematic of like 90s anime. Cause like when I think of 90s anime, I think of like very like lanky, tall, like very Yoshiyuki Sadamoto type of character designs, like lanky, tall, drawn out, and relatively clean. Mob to me represents a lot more of like an 80s design aesthetic. I actually think that there's a lot of, Katsuhiro Otomo's like Akira designs in the way that Mob has designed its characters. It's a lot more simplistic, but if you ever look at Katsuhiro Otomo's designs, everybody's kind of short. Everybody's kind of stubby. And like, I think that contributes to like sort of the like kiddish way that like a lot of those characters are designed. And I think Mob kind of does the same thing, but like just more on a surface level. I also think that, you know, the backgrounds are, like I said, are all like very like dirty. They're very lived in. They're very scratchy and realistic. Like, you know, the city in Mob looks the way a city looks. It doesn't look like most anime from nowadays where like everything is just like pristine white and the streets all look like you can eat off of them. And like, you know, like the Japan presented in most anime nowadays is like such a like ridiculously like sanitized. It's like one of my biggest gripes, honestly, with modern anime is that more people are not, more productions are not like brave enough to basically like make, you know, modern Japan look the way it does, which is like everywhere else. It's like every other first world country. Like, it's, Japan's a very clean country, but you know, Tokyo especially, and like most big cities, Osaka, like they all, like they all have areas that just look like shit. Like every city has them, and we all go through them to get from point A to point B. Some of us live in them. Like, it's just, you know, every area, every every city has a shitty industrial area that nobody likes to go through. And like every, like, you know, there's plenty of cities around the globe that have like a shitty downtown that nobody goes to after 5 p.m. Like, it's, you know, and the Mob is really like, you know, hearkening back to like the 80s style of like really almost playing up flaws in the design. But obviously it's like, it is. But to answer the question, it is absolutely a conscious decision. Like, it's confirmed that it's a conscious decision. But yeah, I'd say it represents, all the nostalgic parts of the show represent more 80s than 90s, because 90s is when anime started to shift away from sort of the like hyperviolence and sort of crime focused stuff to more, you know, fantasy and sci-fi and like, you know, imaginative sci-fi and like more aspirational stuff, sort of laying the frameworks, groundworks for what the stuff that we see today in anime.
I agree. I think there's also something that from our perspective looks a little bit familiar to like Western cartoons of the 90s. I think that might be also,
I mean,
something,
and maybe that's what this person means, whether it's there or not. Maybe that's what this person is referencing, but yeah, it definitely takes a big page out of like what Western animation looked like in the 90s. Maybe not like Western film animation, but certainly like children's animation that was on TV in the 90s. Yeah. Like,
that's kind of what I see.
Very much looks like Mob. Oh, I remember you mentioning earlier, Subs, that you had a hot take regarding the ending that I would really like to hear. Because I watched it again today, the last episode, and was like, I don't know. Like, I was struggling to find what anybody could have a hot take about. So I would, I'm excited to hear it.
Okay. I think you guys have heard me talk about, we did our Devilman Crybaby pod, the idea of like how Devilman kind of approached, I think, like, Might Makes Right in a refreshingly good sort of way. A lot of shonen, so I mentioned this when we talked about shonen and how the show is like and is not like a lot of shonen, and I think the show kind of is shares that in a kind of foundational way the same spirit as a lot of shonen. And I hate to bring up this show, but it's the one that comes to mind, Rurouni Kenshin. Oh, like, boy. Kenshin in this show has this philosophy of peace, right? And he proves it, that it is correct, by beating the shit out of all his opponents. Until they're like, ah, yes, I am beaten. Peace is the correct way, right? And in some ways, I want to ask, like, how is this different from Mob Psycho? And what I mean by that is, like, it seems in the end, the way the ending turned out, that you could argue that it is also this results based thing that like he empathies everyone into submission. That like empathy and compassion and humaneness are shown to be correct because ultimately everyone does come around to that way of thinking. Mm-hmm. Those ideas overpower them. And I think the show's message would have been actually stronger in some ways if Suzuki died. If Mob was like, yeah, there are some people that I just can't save no matter what my power is. And that doesn't negate the correctness of what I'm saying. Like, yeah. that he is beyond saving and that he dies and goes away doesn't invalidate kind of Mob's moral philosophy. It doesn't make it not correct just because the result didn't, you know, that someone didn't come around, because not everyone is going to accept the truth, right? In life, no matter how like brazenly obvious it might be or not. Results don't determine, I think, what's true. And I think you could make an argument based on the way the show kind of goes. And maybe the counter argument is with Mogami, but I think it would have been stronger to do something like that at the end, like come to a kind of crescendo in that way. And so I think, yeah, the show is open to this critique that it reinforces this sort of message of like what's correct, you know, results based thinking about morals.
Let me ask you this. Do you think it would have, his death would have served what you're saying more if Mob had killed him? Or do you think that it would have been more similar to what we got, which is, you know, Mob essentially realizes that he's powerless to convince this man or empathize him into submission, as you said, and essentially waits with him there, and instead of him surviving the explosion miraculously, he dies and Mob survives. Which of those two options do you think would serve your point more?
Well,
because to me, the reason I bring this up is because to me, the ending where Mob kills him is a hell of a lot more of a different thing to deal with now than Mob basically giving up and then him dying. Not necessarily directly due to Mob's, you know, intervention.
I think it would have, I think both are interesting. I have actually not thought about this at all, but like just kind of off the top of the dome, I think in some ways the radicalness of what the show, at least in my reading of it, is asking of people would have been served if everything happened as it did, except for Mob and Suzuki die.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing is, like, the end of season two is not the end of the manga.
Is that really? Oh, I thought it was over. Is there more?
I don't know. I don't know. I always assumed that there was more manga, but I don't know. It seems like it,
because when somebody comes to take Suzuki away, and they're like, oh, yeah, another one.
Who are they? That's a great point.
That's a character that shows up actually earlier. He's a Esper that works for the military or the government or something like that.
He's one of like two underdeveloped characters.
And that's a whole thing that they don't go into that they leave open is holy shit, the government has had like covert Esper operatives working for them this entire time, and he was undercover in Claw, which is cool that they don't go into it.
That gives me so much hope that they might do something with Tsubomi. Mm-hmm. Gosh, she's like a waste if this is it for her.
I think there just wasn't time for her. I think that it is implied that there is a lot more depth to Tsubomi, but like we don't follow any of the characters who are around her. So I was kind of not as dissatisfied with it because like there was more, it was more implied that she had her own story. We just didn't get to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do and I feel terrible that I am woefully under-researched because I am not a manga reader. Not for obvious reasons. I think if I had the choice between experiencing it in one's original art style and what Bones has done with it, I would. Yeah. That's not even a well. Yeah, and it's like it's like, you know, would you choose to read the original One Punch Man comic or fucking Yusuke Murata's version of it? Like, it's a no-brainer. But again, not to shit on One, because I do genuinely like his art and his writing. I think he's a remarkable dude. But you know, it's a no-brainer. But yeah, it's. I do not think that that is the end of the manga. I think it is technically still ongoing, as far as I know.
It's amazing.
So I think
happy. You've made me so are happy. You,
I can understand being frustrated with the fact that like Mob's idea is successful every time, basically.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm just interrupting you to say it concluded publication in December 22nd, 2017. But I do not know if that means that all of the available material has been adapted.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
That just means that it is technically over.
Okay.
Anyways.
Yeah, like, Subs, would your point be served about as well if there was just another story arc where Mob's idea just didn't, like it did fail to convert somebody?
Yeah, I think so. I think
I agree with that.
I think that that's right, and I don't think, like, I think what the show is trying to say still, like, comes through very clearly and is very affecting and profound, but I think the fact that it is always successful kind of leaves the ideas with this feeling that, oh, well, here's something theoretical that's nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it is a little bit simplistic in that aspect. And I agree. I think it would be... I think there might not have been time in the story that we got, but I think it would have really rounded out a lot of Mob's perspective to have that too.
Yeah. And like I said, I mean, you could make a counter-argument re Mogami, but I think Mogami sort of serves a very specific purpose in my reading of the show.
Jeez,
and it would have been stronger to fail against someone like Suzuki, where the stakes for the world and all of the friends are so incredibly high.
I agree, and I think they could have gone farther with that. Personally, the way the series hit me, like, I kind of got a little bit of that message, like, where, like, the thing Mob says right before he sits down with him is that he, like, basically implies that he doesn't think he can win and that he doesn't think his philosophy works. He's like I get now that I can't convince you, but like, even though I know I can't stop you, this is still what I'm gonna do because this is who I am. I kind of got that sense, but it was very quick and it wasn't explored very much. I think it was communicated that Mob would have made the same choice knowing one way or the other.
So I've done some cursory research. I think for all intents and purposes, I don't know. It's hard to say whether or not there's any more to be adapted, because apparently season two adapted through chapter 91, and I think the manga ended in chapter 101, which is very fitting. Okay. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, maybe like that's the, you know, the Blu-ray OVA.
A movie.
Might touch on some of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, a movie sure would be nice.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
I feel like a Mob Psycho movie would like pierce the veil of the universe.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, I think you're right. I think it would.
Just the pure like amount of like time and money that would be afforded to a production that is already just like so out of the realm of most in terms of quality. I feel like I would watch like 5 minutes of it and then just like turn into LCL.
Agreed.
Amazing.
Okay, one last topic I want to hit as kind of our final.
Oh no, did I miss theme. Like bunch of final thematic.
Yeah. I wanted to hit on the idea of psychic powers being kind of an allegory. We talked a little bit about emotions and psychic powers being kind of a metaphor for that. especially with the percentage and stuff, but I kind of wanted to get a little bit deeper into that.
I know I definitely did bring up at least the idea of psychic powers as an allegory for like social power, mm-hmm. and uh-huh. also sometimes like political power. I definitely think Suzuki's whole use of psychic power can definitely be in some cases interpreted as an allegory for political power, considering how he runs a massive organization and at one point literally gives other people powers with his own power.
Yep.
So
yeah, Suzuki in some ways I kind of see him as like a collection of the flaws of a bunch of the characters, like the flaws of Ritsu and Teru originally and Reagan, like sort of pushed to their logical extreme.
Yeah, especially Teru.
Yeah, the like being the one that matters, right? Like being the protagonist of this world in a way that is not the sort of healthy way that Mob comes to view it later. And then how kind of Ritsu discovers himself in some ways by like just throwing away this ideal student thing that he felt was pushed on him to kind of watch the world burn, and how he felt like this is freeing. Psychic powers and this like make me free. And Suzuki was like, I'm freer than anyone else. Like me, you and me, Mob, mm-hmm. we are the freest because we have the power. And he's kind of the antithesis of like, you know, if you buy into the Martin Buber kind of stuff that I'm reading into the show, like Buber is very much like a thing I forgot to touch on when I talked about it earlier, is that like he believes that like one of the reasons to seek out or respond to, because you kind of can't manufacture them, to respond to I thou moments and situations, is because like human beings only grow with each other. Mm-hmm. That relations are the way we experience all the transcendent moments and spiritual growth in our lives is with other people and not in ourselves. And Suzuki explicitly says, like, I don't need bonds. You know, you say I lack them, but I'm complete on my own. Mm-hmm. So, like, the total polar opposite idea is clashing with Mob here at the end.
Yeah.
Really kind of also embodies the like protagonist of my own life thing, because I think he literally at one point says like if I'm essentially like, you know, his entire philosophy is the purest form of might makes right, in the sense that if I'm wrong, why has nobody been able to challenge me yet?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, like why has nobody taken me down? Why am I the most powerful Esper on Earth? Clearly, I am the protagonist of this story because nobody is powerful enough to challenge me. Because that's all he cares about, is mm-hmm. power. I know that doesn't factor necessarily super much into what psychic power is an allegory for.
It's
but
right, sorry.
You know,
that's okay. You just got to me tangenting about Suzuki.
It's okay. To kind of bring it around, I guess more concretely, like, especially in the beginning where the 100% thing is kind of more of a new idea and it matters a little bit more. When I was rewatching it, I liked watching it and trying to see, like, when the meter went up. And if you track it, it's, like, it is varying degrees of, especially in the beginning, Mob's, like, emotional repression.
Yeah.
And then once it gets to 100%, it explodes and it all comes out. And there are a couple times where it, like, labels specifically what emotion is being built up. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, like, the fight with Teru, it's not anger, it's sadness. Like,
yeah.
It's, like, the color is blue and it says sadness and he just cries at the end of that fight.
Gratitude for his master.
Yeah.
That was the best one.
Yeah, there was, like, it wasn't always, I thought it was interesting that it wasn't always anger that fueled his, like, emotional outbursts. I liked looking at a lot, even multiple people's psychic powers, like even Suzuki, he mentions that his powers come out the most when he's under a lot of stress.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think it is him who mentions that negative emotions are more powerful, quote unquote, as in terms of like psychic output
than
positive ones.
Mogami.
Yeah, that was Mogami.
Yeah.
That's why I'm so powerful, because literally every bad thing has happened to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And so And I like, personally, when I'm looking at that, I can see it as an allegory for, like, I think the important part is, like, the 100% thing where Mob gets taken over by his powers mm. and where it, like, basically is his powers. And that, like you were saying, Mark, that psychic entity is, like, is a thing inside of him that comes out that he doesn't control.
Yeah.
And I think, at least from my perspective, the psychic powers become about whether you are in control of your emotions or your emotions are in control of your actions.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
In how you interact with other people.
What do you and how about? Sometimes yeah. when your emotions overcome you, it does truly feel like you are a different person. Yep. Yeah. It's like a sort of a dissociative effect right. when those emotions boil over. It, you don't feel... Not only do you not feel like yourself, but if it gets bad enough, sometimes, like, you can have, like Mob does, like, no recollection
yep.
of your actions.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the Mob's line about making sure that you're the one who's making your choices is not just about making sure that you're not being manipulated by other people. Mm-hmm. It's also about making sure that you are, like, making your own choices based on reality and not on being overtaken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, when he's struggling to control his powers, it's not just, like, am I hurting... Like, am I using this for violence or not? Mm. It's like, am I making the decisions when I'm yeah. using this power?
I think it's also really interesting that a lot of the time the show sort of goes out of its way, at least in some episodes, it goes out of its way to show that it's not just like psychic related stuff that contributes to Mob's percentage rising. Mm-hmm. Like, I think there are multiple parts in the show, especially I think in the second season, where they sort of go more into like how stressful Mob's like school life is and how shitty some of the students are to him of showing stressful situations happening to him at school and in everyday life and his percentage going up. And I think at one point even there's towards the end of the first season or like whenever Shinichiro Miki's character first shows up, I can't remember what exactly his name is, but like the dude who like has the like spiral rings around his arms that just like punches the shit out of Mob in an alley for like 5 minutes. I think there's literally a moment in that show where, or in that episode where Ritsu goes, "Oh God, this isn't good. Like too much stress and Nichan will explode," or something like that. Like it basically explicitly states that like stress is the trigger.
He's been so afraid of that
because so stress is an emotional trigger. Yeah. It's more of an emotional trigger than like basically anything else.
Did that guy at the end decide to open up a ramen shop?
He did. He said, "Now that I don't have scars anymore, I can open up a ramen shop."
So good.
And what's his name is the one of the two Hoseyan characters.
Yeah,
in the
other Hoseyan.
The sword guy is like, you might want to get rid of all those piercings first. He still has like,
you're not cut out for the service industry.
The other guy has a he used to be like the leader of that section of Claw, and he's like, I'm interviewing at a convenience store next week.
Yeah.
Like, man, that's maybe so the good. Most depressing character arc of anybody in this show.
<It's> really.
Yeah. Man, that character. I like that character even plays in when the episode where Reagan is telling off all of the adult villains.
Oh my god.
And he's like, the reason I'm acting like this is because of all the stress I was under from all my trauma. Like he had a horrible life and he explained his horrible life, and then Reagan's like, "Oh, I totally know how you feel." Yeah. This one time I forgot my lunch at school. The guy's like, "What?" It's not the same.
I think he's like, "I'm saying this in order to convey to you the fact that we are brothers," or something. Yeah.
It's so funny. I like, as like kind of a final point on that, I think all of the psychic power and the letting loose and the not being in control, I think it all kind of culminates with Suzuki, because at the end he admits that he's not in control of his powers anymore, that they are just gonna explode and they're going crazy.
Yeah, and he like isn't willing to
and he's like, "Oh, I can't figure out how to stop it, so you're gonna have to
fix
it."
He has a line that's like, "You brought out these like
the destructive
you brought out these destructive impulses in me, and now you have to deal with them."
Okay, that line, he says that line while he is beating up
the
Mob.
Shit,
like, he's
out of
like that one hit me so hard. Yeah, because he goes, he's like, you awoke these destructive impulses in me, and now you have to deal with the consequences.
Yeah.
While he is beating a child.
Yep.
Yeah. And like, it's victim blaming.
And he has just been shown actually beating up his own son.
Yep.
So like,
yeah,
just psychic powers. Yeah, as a like as an allegory for like emotions that get out of hand in the extreme, and also mm-hmm. like people blaming their actions on their emotions.
Yes.
And claiming that they like had to act that way.
Yeah.
Or like had no other choice, or that if people give them those emotions then they have to act on them.
Yep.
Honestly, that like we joke about mob being great about like kind of setting aside toxic masculinity. Honestly, that embodies toxic masculinity in my mind, that like excusing things based on emotion,
mm-hmm.
especially violence, especially like hurting other people based on like, well, this made me feel this emotion, so now I get to lash out.
Yeah.
Not responsible for it anymore, right? Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and mob is like that show time and time again is like, no, you are always responsible for what you do.
Yeah.
And your job is to be in control of mm-hmm. the way you behave. And like that is such a powerful like message against that kind of toxicity. I just really appreciate that about Mob Psycho.
Me too.
Well, and it's a very thin line, right? Like it's especially when you have that type of power that could very easily be used to against other people. Like it's very easy to make excuses. And maybe that sort of factors into like, you know, the show's notion of like what a good person is. It's like maybe the, you know, a good person in this world is the type of person that can resist those urges to make an excuse that would maybe make their life easier, but would hurt others in the process.
Mm-hmm. Yes, oh yeah. Absolutely. Oh yeah. I mean, I think, I think the show actually goes farther than that and maybe somewhat unquestionably and says like the ideally good person like is willing to be harmed in order to help other people, which is never a thing I would tell anyone else is right or that they should do that. But Mob is very much willing to suffer to show other people the better path, right? To help them.
Yeah.
I think it does. And I'll, you know, a lot of people tell him not to do that in the show too.
Yeah.
But it's, I guess you really would have to like dig into like who exactly is telling him that. Yeah, it's weird. It's conflicting because there like definitely are some aspects of the show that are, like seem to be referencing like self-care and its importance. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then others that are like, no, actually, like maybe your self-care should take a backseat to helping other people or like at least putting your ass on the line for other people.
It's hard when it does have to follow a hero storyline and that he does have to defeat the bad guy.
And like heroes have kind to of make sacrifices after. For other people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's like literally the definition of heroism. Mm.
And also if you're like sort of tracking Mob as the moral compass of the show, like or not.
Yeah.
You know, you could view it in different ways.
Yeah. I hadn't thought as much about whether Mob or Reagan is more of the moral compass of the show. And I think the answer lies somewhere in between them, but I hadn't thought about how much, and this is kind of making me rethink that.
Like I thought of William Blake, and my wife actually deserves credit for this because she's long since gone to bed, so she can't speak about this unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, she was immediately like, well, this is, you know, the lamb and the tiger, this is the songs of innocence and experience and how they are both part of the world and they both kind of need each other in a lot of ways. And Mob is that innocence, like you said, to a fault, and Reagan is more world weary and the kind of experience side, and has that inclination to protect Mob and his innocence, but he can't do it forever. Mob has to lose it and go forward and grow and become like a fuller, like the fullest kind of version of himself.
On that note, with Reagan coming back to whether he's a good person or whether he before we get to that.
Thank God.
before we derail completely.
Psychic powers.
I even saw some people that question about whether Mob knew all along that Reagan had no psychic powers or like does even saw some people being like, does Reagan actually have some kind of power?
Man, I thought he did for so long.
I certainly thought he did in the last episode until they explained what actually happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think like because initially Reagan just makes that throwaway promise to become his master, and he says, like, I'll teach you how to use your psychic powers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But, like, if you think about it, like, he doesn't have powers, and he did lie about that, but, like, he did teach Mob how to use his powers in a way.
Yeah.
And, like, he is actually his master because, like, he teaches Mob how to regulate his emotions in some situations, and that is equivalent to learning how to regulate his psychic powers in a way. So, like, in a way, he kind of does teach Mob how to use his powers.
He gave him the, his first kind of set of really basic moral principles regarding psychic powers, you know?
And he does continue, like, there's an episode we never mentioned that where, like, it's kind of brief and it's mostly for a gag, but Mob gets, like, tricked into a scam with that vase.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Rain comes and rescues him, and he, like, cons his way out of the con. And, yeah.
Did you, did you experience that as, like, a gag? Because, like, that one, I felt, like, intensely about it. Like,
really?
I don't know.
I had some feelings about it, too.
Like, I mean, just seeing adults prey on a kid like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it just, it fucking got me in my core. Like, it really hurt me.
I'm sorry, are we talking about the thing with the vase?
Yeah.
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 The art dealers. Okay, good. I'm really glad that you brought this up, because this is a perfect illustration of how most of the time when like it's weird how Reagan never really consciously switches his morality when he's dealing, like, person to person, except obviously for Mob. But you know, he's a con man, and we're never in the show, I don't think, really taught to root for him when he's, like, conning explicitly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is funny, because the entire way that everybody gets out of that situation, the ones that we're rooting for, is Reagan comes in and cons the shit out of two con men.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really funny, because, like, I never once in probably any other part of that show rooted for Reagan to, like, succeed with a con, except for that moment when two shittier con men showed up.
Yeah.
And then I was like, yeah, all right. Like, I was like, as soon as he showed up, because I completely forgot about that scene, and I forgot how it resolved. And as soon as he showed up, I was like, oh, these people are fucked. I cannot wait to see how badly they get, like, messed up out of this.
Yeah.
Use your powers for good.
Yeah.
I think it was interesting because he just de-escalated the situation. Like, he brought it back to neutral where Mob could just leave.
Yeah.
And, like, he didn't actually take anything from those guys. He was just like, no, this isn't happening.
No,
yeah.
So I think
that's just kind of how
That's just kind of how Reagan uses his tactics. And, like, I know conning is bad. Like, we never are supposed to root for him, but, like, that one episode where he goes to help the farmer.
Yeah.
And the farmer's like, well, I can't pay you, but, like, he just has him give him vegetables instead. So, like, he doesn't like ring people beyond what they can handle.
Yeah.
He does have some weird kind of moral code.
He does. Yeah.
Where he, like, respects people even though he takes advantage of them on some level.
I mean, like, even when he is conning people out of their money because they, like, don't actually need an exorcist's help, he's almost always providing some kind of service.
He is, yeah.
Yeah.
Even if it's,
to,
like,
address their problem.
Yeah, to address, even if it's, like, Photoshop or a massage.
A massage, yeah. I honestly think he should open up a massage parlor.
He's a great really massage should.
Artist. Yeah.
He really should. This, yeah, that's, like, a kind of, like, a lot of, like, micro kind of incidents that a different context than what I mentioned earlier about how he essentially conned all those claw kids out of the dangerous situation and put them on the road to help better themselves. Like, he's sort of doing that all the time. And I don't know, maybe it's the same kind of deal of, like, these people are not ready to hear the truth. They don't want to hear, like, there's no such thing as ghosts and spirits. So I'll just like fix their problem and, you know, I got to eat too, so they'll take your money.
I think you're right. I hadn't thought about it that way. Well, speaking of Reagan.
God.
He's not always that way. He makes bad decisions and fucks himself over, but
he does.
And speaking of bad decisions.
Of bad decisions. So the reason that we're all actually here recording this podcast.
Well, we did get a Twitter question.
We did get a Twitter question about it.
This isn't what we designed this podcast around, but it was inevitable.
Yes.
Go ahead. Do you want to read it?
Okay, this is from Allison at Meowth900. It says, why do people think Reagan is an internet sex symbol? Mark, I think you had some
feelings about this.
Yeah, I have. Answers. Well, I don't know.
Didn't this quote stem from an Anime News Network article?
It stemmed from an article of some kind. I'm just really? Going to Google internet sex symbol.
Yeah, Reagan. I'm pretty dang sure I follow the person.
Yeah.
So like, thought this was like a huge joke. Like, I have no idea to like what this is referring to or how serious it is. Like, I don't know.
It's I've been on the internet. Like, I can tell you it's pretty serious.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I do feel like that there is a certain like. Element of like sort of performative tongue-in-cheek in it, as there is with
yes.
many things online, you
know, every yes everything yes many things. By that, do you mean everything
pretty
online?
Much
but
yes
I feel
yes.
like with this one it keeps looping around and getting serious again, and then everyone's like, wait, no, this is a joke, and then it loops around again, and it's very distressing to
yeah.
watch.
Well, huh. I think that a lot of people have to keep that plausible deniability because Reagan is a fucking scumbag. Yeah. And like,
how dare you.
He look. I mean, think he's it's the classic. He's a, I love he is this trash an incredibly man. He's an incredibly lovable scumbag, but yes. Reagan is a scumbag. Like, he's a fucking con artist. Like, that's like the definition of a scumbag. Like, he's a very like morally interesting and sometimes very good and positive scumbag, but he still is.
Doesn't that like, mean you're not a scumbag? Is it a scumbag like a no. sort of totalizing term?
No, he's dude. I'm talking like archetypically now. He's an
okay,
scumbag.
Okay, yeah, all right. That's true. Okay. I'm yeah, with you. Like in the literary categories, like yes, he goes under yeah, scumbag. Yeah, yeah. Yes,
yes, yeah. The literary archetype of scumbag, which is I'm sure in
there's
many
like a
style
picture of him
out there.
There.
Yeah,
he's a trash man, if you will.
Yeah,
I don't have too many opinions on this. Like in terms of like, you know, like if I find Reagan sexy or not, because I'm. Attracted to mostly women, and the type of men that I'm attracted to are like
not
you
scumbags.
Could not get more polar opposite than Reagan if you fucking tried. But the thing that I've noticed about internet sex symbol Reagan Arataka is
please say it
that,
as many times as you can.
At least in my experience, and I, you know, I'm not saying this as a weird flex, but okay, or a boast, but I follow a ton of queer folks on Twitter, and the vast majority, if not all, the people I see talking about Reagan in respect to his status as internet sex symbol are straight women almost entirely. I don't think I've ever seen anybody that's not that I follow that at least that's not a straight woman be sexually attracted in any way to Reagan. But that's also, I understand, a generalization and also extremely personal based on my own Twitter experiences, but I am, as they say, chronically online. so, but yeah, I'd like to hear everybody else's opinions, because I don't really have any, like, I feel like I would be both disingenuous and like incredibly like unwelcome in my giving my opinion on like why he's a sex symbol, because like I don't have a horse in this race either way.
First of all, I found the Anime News Network article yeah, that so, mentions it. Yep. It's, I don't know if this is the first one that mentioned it on ANN, but it's it was just an episode review of the second season of Mob Psycho, the first three episodes. It just mentions that, most importantly, scumbag con artist and internet sex symbol Reagan is back in business. And
I'm glad
I'm pretty
that
sure
they specifically used the word scumbag.
Scumbag?
Yeah, yeah. There was this. It was absolutely used in articles on ANN, and it kind of went viral, and it even made it to Japan fandom Twitter. Like, I yep. saw fan art of, like,
of Reagan
finding
out
he was a sex symbol.
Yeah.
They know.
Also, secondly, Mark, I just want to say this must mean I've been very careful about what I retweet on my Twitter for what you've seen for Reagan Thirst.
I think also, to be fair, and this is not, like, a call-out post or anything, but I follow Lisa Wallen on Twitter, and
oh,
she...
Man.
Is the horniest person I've ever seen online for any
she
anime
sure
character.
Is. She
and I
sure
love I love her for it. I can respect the hustle, but I think her handle was literally like Reagan, please sit on my face for at least like a week or two.
It's back to being a Reagan one again.
Yeah. She Reagan is her husband, and like I can get it. I mean, I don't get it, but
okay, I'm like,
go on.
No, I'm like, I don't identify as a Reagan fucker.
No.
I won't say I haven't participated In the culture.
I also stand there. Okay, listen, if we're going to talk about this, we have to talk about the fact that no one is hornier for Reagan Arataka than the Bones staff
animating him.
Because let me tell you, he does not look like that in the manga.
Nope.
That's true. Well, but nobody looks like they ever, like I said, when I was talking about the character designs, like they're all let's just say touched up for animation.
Like, yes, but there is a specific type of lingering like gaze that they put on Reagan in the way that he dresses and the way he dresses and undresses himself. And like they there are ass shots, there are they've used the full extent of like this is a man in a suit.
Do you mean in the comics?
No, I mean in the anime. Like
in the anime, yeah.
I don't know if this fact does not come across if you are not a person who is actually attracted to men, but like it's like, you know how you see fan service characters.
See what you're talking about. Okay, cool. There's a certain like horny dad energy.
Yes.
Exudes with I could definitely see like if you have a suit fetish, you would be just fucking Niagara Falls over
Reagan. Like, it is definitely not in that direction.
That part.
Mm-hmm. It's like, why? You can't convince me that he dresses this nice. But like,
that's the thing is like he still looks like a greasy idiot most of the time. Like,
he actually takes away from the suit he's wearing.
Yeah, like the suit. Yeah, the suit is like the set dressing on the just again scumbag. Like,
yeah,
he's, you know, I don't know. Yeah, it's an interesting thing to dissect because this is I usually can see it. Like, I usually can understand it. I can see it objectively. This one just okay. I think for me, honestly, like for most people, it's probably I like at least in my experience. Being online, it's like weirdly enough, like outside of the like suit fetishism and the weird like horny way that they animate him like spinning and putting on his suit jacket,
like the stuff he does with his hands, like
the stuff, the jutsus he does, the Naruto summoning jutsus, I think a lot of it could be his personality too. Like, I think people just like a good old-fashioned scumbag, like a good old-fashioned know-it-all.
The reason he's successful is his charisma. Like, that's his number one personality trait, is that's what makes him a con artist. And like,
exactly,
lots of people fall for charismatic people. Mm-hmm. Also, in Reagan's favor, he is voiced by Takahiro Sakurai.
That is true.
And talk about like people horny for scumbags. This is the same man who voiced Rohan Kishibe. So
he voices a lot of hot dudes.
Yes,
but it's weird because this is also the man that brought a level of humanity and pathos to Rohan Kishibe that maybe that character has never seen before and maybe never will see since. It is undeniable that the version of Rohan Kishibe that appears in the Part 4 anime is by far the most likable version of that character.
Yeah.
I think that might be Oh, I love him as a Saiyan.
Unfuckable, hateable prick in everything but the anime. Including the video games. Yeah, there is. Yeah, the Takahiro Sakurai factor should not be like that's like X in this equation.
Yeah, it really is. It honestly is.
What are y'all? The other thing might be the massage thing. That might,
you know,
You know what? Also, this is like maybe digging too far into it, but it's interesting that you say that it is a lot of straight women who are horny, or like at least women who love men who are horny for Reagan. Yeah. Because I can kind of see that in terms of like not that he's not masculine, but it's like he's like safe.
He's
an unthreatening character.
Yeah. Yep. It's a really
good point. He's an unthreatening character with charisma, which is rare. Like he'll charm the pants off you, but you'll want it to happen. Essentially.
Yeah, and also like,
you'll feel safe with it happening, and you know that like boundaries still exist.
Yeah. And he's like an okay dude at heart, and also if it came down to it, you could totally fight him.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but I do think, you know, just in my experience, because like it is like, you know, not to overgeneralize, but it is a type online that I've seen, and like, mm-hmm. you know, he is a very devastating combination of a couple things. He's a guy in a suit who is animated really well in a suit. He's very good with his hands because the whole massage thing. He's strong but not too strong.
Yeah,
he whips ass multiple times in the series, but not so much so that he's like a fighter. And he's just like he's attractive enough without seeming inaccessible, mm-hmm. and he's good with his hands, and he's capable, and he's charismatic. Like, he's that also, is a devastating.
Yeah. We forgot the very most important thing, and that is morosexuals.
Yeah, that's true. You're right.
Discount all that of them. Too.
This is the real. We've hit on that's it. The this real. Is it.
So, yeah. That we've got the nugget of gold now.
Yeah. He's also like an underdog, which I think is important because he's, you know, always feels like they're about to go broke, and despite the fact that, you know, he's doing are con jobs, like you kind of root for him because him and Mob are attached. And he's good with kids. Yeah, there you go.
That's true.
That's a huge one.
Oh no.
What?
We've just found so many good points in his favor now.
Also, like, I think some people just find him. Yeah,
I think most of these are not him trying to do this. I think he stumbled across all of these by accident.
Again, moron.
Yeah, and like lots of people find him very relatable because like sometimes you are just like a burger eating mess. Sometimes that's just how people be.
I think it is also a weird, like an oddly millennial trend to be into like extremely mediocre people because they feel so relatable. Yeah.
Well, this is like actually like threatening. Super.
I feel targeted. Super...
Well, yeah, like this is
Reagan. Mm-hmm. I again will just say like I do get it.
You're valid sometimes.
I'm sorry, we should have let you speak first.
That's okay. I think he is super hot. And the Seiyu and the underdog factor and the fact that like I am fascinated kind of by his sort of position like the morality spectrum of the show. All that stuff. Like, and sometimes they just make him so pretty. Like, he's so pretty when he's like sprinkling salt on people or like massaging them. Like, there's that scene in episode 2 that you put in the original shout out is like a gif I've watched hundreds of times.
Yes.
So good.
I'd say I agree for the most part, but I also kind of look at him and he's, to me, the epitome of like, I get it, but like, oh, sweetheart, you could do so much better.
I'm always
it's either him or Griffith. It's my choices.
Oh, Christ.
Another character who has been voiced by Takahiro Sakurai.
Yes. Yeah.
Real.
Jesus. I don't want to think about that.
I think the Sakurai factor is like one of the highest that people don't pay enough attention to, personally.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be your take.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, just since we broached the topic, I mean, I'll save the stuff, I guess, that we didn't get to touch on. Like, I think, like, the Mogami stuff, I think, is so fucking raw and fantastic. And mm-hmm. we should, in a just an ideal world, treat it thoroughly. But just the psychic power stuff, like, just two quick other points. Like, I think that there's like so many ways you could read it, and I think the great thing about that is that none of them, I don't feel like any of these readings are mutually exclusive. Like, you can kind of think that at one point in the show this sort of allegory is more emphasized and this other one is de-emphasized, and then that sort of will change fluidly throughout the show. Like, I think related one, but I think distinct from what you said about emotions, that I took away from it is that psychic powers are this kind of expression of your identity, like a very holistic, unrepressed identity that young people are discovering and also creating for themselves. And I think, like, if you see it that way, I think it can be really powerful because Mob, in the beginning, in season 1, he feels like he can't and shouldn't fully be himself. He should not let all of this stuff out completely because of all these different reasons, right? Like Tsubomi embarrasses him and says, like, your powers are weird. Reagan is very much like, don't do it. It's going to hurt other people. Don't hurt, like, really plays that up. Like, you have Ritsu who's just resentful of him for it. And he knows Ritsu is so kind of afraid of who he is. But, like, it's so great because he, like, learns, like, as the show goes on, like, he realizes that being fully himself and, like, embracing his unique identity, it can, like, touch other people's lives. Like, with Emmy in the first episode, that moment where he puts together her manuscript again is really magical. And then he realizes that doing that could save people. He's able to save Suzuki. He's able to save the young girl that Mogami possessed. I forget her name. And those are things that I think that he was not, like, he didn't believe in the first season. He was very repressive about his powers. And so if you kind of see them as personal identity and self-expression, and you can read them into, like, Ritsu and Mogami as well. Like, Ritsu awakens to himself as he allows himself to express these really negative emotions and really inhabit them. Like, he'd gotten tired of himself. He'd gotten tired of, again, the super ideal honor student role that he felt like he'd been given. And so he really awakens to his psychic powers because he throws that away. And eventually, like, he goes on to reveal, like, he wasn't even jealous of Mob's power, that he wanted to, like, authentically devote himself to something completely. Yeah, I think that that's could be an interesting way that you could read the show at times. And then you could also, like, this final point, I think you could apply to, in a general sense, to a lot of the show. Like, you could read psychic powers as, like, you know, we see a lot of young people that have psychic powers. There are some adults, but I think, I mean, the show is mostly concerned with kids that have them. And in the second season, there are many more adults, but you could kind of read psychic powers at times as being this expression of, like, this unbridled potential that young people have. Like, it's a power that they're born with, and it's like, what could it do? You can't even imagine, right? It could just change the whole world and reshape reality. And, like, I think there is really potential in young people in our world, like, to do that. But, like, kids also are fragile. They're also vulnerable. They also get tricked by, like, cults, like Dimple's cult, get pulled into places like Claw by, like, these, and all their energy is unfortunately, like, misdirected, right? Like, to these shitty ends that old people already in power, like, wanting to keep themselves in power, have. Especially in season one, I think you could maybe see, like, this is what psychic powers kind of are in a sense. And yeah, I think that there's, like, again, a lot of, like, non sort of mutually exclusive ways you can look at them. And I think it's really neat.
Yeah. Yeah. When I started outlining this pod, I had some specific meanings in mind for what I was going to have us talk about, for what specific things represent. But then the more I tried to put it together, the more I was like, it's not just one thing.
Yeah.
It's a lot of things.
And that's like a mark of great fiction, I think, is that, like, it's not hyper specific in that, okay, you have to absolutely read this one thing into it and you're absolutely wrong. Otherwise, I mean, I think that's silly anyway, regardless, but, like, just that there's all this room for valid and interesting and impactful and meaningful interpretation.
And then the same, like, sentiment reaches a lot of different types of people who, like, are more impacted by a certain way that stuff is told.
Yes. And that is one of those things that helps make it, like, for, you know, many, like, more people.
Kind of like the storytelling style, how it's, like, so visually awesome to watch, and but also, like, a great story, so that people who are more impacted by either of those can still, like, really, really be, like, really feel the message of the anime. Man, there are so many things. You're right about us not even getting to Mogami stuff. I'm wondering if we could just do, like, a little short some other time.
Yeah.
Just record a little.
Those episodes.
A little bonus return to some
cool symbolism. I could try, like, to make it
I could
it
do
short.
A whole pod on the umbrella.
The umbrella.
Yeah, there's just so much stuff that I didn't even get to talk about.
I think it's okay to make your peace with not getting to everything. I think that's just, like, kind of the nature of stuff.
almost like we tried to do one short podcast about 24 episode series.
Yeah.
Right.
Speaking of Reagan.
Speaking of Reagan.
We did get another Twitter question that says, it's from @GarrowTheHero. It says, if Reagan gave up psychic work, what profession do you think he would have chosen next?
I do think massage therapist.
Yeah,
I think
we mentioned
that. Yeah, I think that's the natural choice. Mm-hmm. We get a glimpse of the job that he worked before he decided to become a psychic, though, right?
Yeah.
He was working in like an office job.
It looked like a call center.
It was like a call center for selling water dispensers to other offices, which is the most depressing thing I've ever.
You know how like people delineate Lupin the Third according to what jacket he's wearing? Well, that's green tie Reagan in the office.
Yeah, that's right. That's
before
true.
He becomes pink tie Reagan.
Oh my gosh, I love how he, like, if he was working a call center, and that's what it seemed like, especially from the people around him,
yeah,
like making those sales calls, it seemed like he left one con job for another one.
Yeah.
And that, like, it's almost like if he wasn't tricking people into thinking he had psychic powers, he would have been doing essentially the same line of work.
Yeah,
just
for such a shittier, like, con, right? I mean, he's not helping anyone in the call center.
Yep. It's maybe funny how he, like,
go ahead,
just kind of moved over one.
I'm gonna go used car salesman.
That's
yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he could do it
around there. He is used car salesman adjacent.
Totally.
I feel like Reagan could be a great radio talk show host.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like he has no end. He wouldn't even need guests. They could just put him on air for an hour.
Oh my god.
And he could just ramble about his, you know, his lecture of the week.
That'd be so good.
I would
good.
Pay a
like
lot of money.
Like the way he does
the
next
that.
Episode announcements.
Podcaster.
Yeah.
This is like
Podcaster Reagan Art.
Like, he could do like a Frasier type thing, you know? This is Reagan Arataka. I'm listening. And he could just counsel people in the way that he counseled Bob.
Yeah. So basically,
just
he's
bad
Frasier.
Relationship advice.
Oh, like with Tsubomi.
He's.
That's true.
This is, this is bordering. This is really bordering on him just being Frasier at this point. And I don't like it.
All right. Last Twitter questions. We got a couple of them from Rudy at Robot Twitter. He says, do you think that Mob Psycho 100 is different in the way that coming-of-age stories are typically told in anime? I'd like to hope it's a good kind of different, definitely less sexual or romantic focused. Yeah, because, like,
I think so.
Like, Mob has a crush, but, like, there's no arc where he gets together with her, with anyone, really.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's no, like, rival love interest.
Yeah.
I also think Mob's age is young enough to where you have plausible deniability about, like, he probably hasn't gone through puberty yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least is, like, just on the verge of it.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on where he is in middle school, I was always under the impression that he was, like maybe fairly early on in his middle school career when the show started.
Mm-hmm. Second year, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The worst one.
So, yeah. They're...
Yuck.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. What do y'all think? I don't know if I'm necessarily equipped to answer this question.
I think that there are a lot of different kinds of coming-of-age stories in anime. It's tough for me to be like, you know, oh, this is totally different or this is totally the same. Because
maybe as far as school life ones.
Yeah, because there's like ones that I think people consider archetypical, but you have like Mitsu Adachi ones that are incredible and really different and are romantic, but also very good. I don't know. I mean, it's like we said, it's, you know, if you want to stick with like the shonen demographic, it has like a lot more depth than a lot of shonen battle stories that try to do come of age do. This is a hard one for me because I think there's like so many different kinds of these stories in different for different demos.
That is kind of hard to say, but I think there is a like for a show with a young shonen protagonist, there is kind of a lot less of a need to focus on romantic storylines really for anyone. Like,
yeah,
there really is no arc for anyone, like not even Reagan at all. It is kind of refreshing. It's just like they are just busy doing other things.
I always feel like coming of age is maybe not even necessarily like, I think maybe like one of the only anime I've ever seen that I feel like really truly deals with coming of age in the sense that like we in the West are used to it as Fooly Cooly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I think like coming of age stories, it's weird because I feel like coming of age stories in the West are like, whenever I think of a coming of age story, I always think of like the stuff that like I think a lot of shows over here like to make fun of. It was like Baba O'Reilly playing in the background as like the 30-year-old version of the narrator is narrating his young life a la The Wonder Years. And like encompassing like all parts of childhood, because it's almost always like a long movie or like a long running TV show or something. Whereas I feel like anime is usually a little bit more granular than that. Like I can't remember, like there's not a whole lot of anime out there that I've seen that really truly tackle stuff like puberty without like couching it. Like even Fully Cooley, it like definitely deals with puberty, but it couches it in like such a ridiculous level of metaphor that like I certainly, having gone through puberty while I was watching that show, did not realize that it was about puberty until I was much older. And I don't know, like I don't know if I would even call Mob really a coming of age story, because most of the evolution he does as a character is not a result of age increasing. It's a result of like a concerted effort on his part to improve himself and him, his morals. So like, yeah, I would hesitate to even call it a coming of age story.
It's, and he's I like, it's he's not done different. Being a child at the end of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But I also like, you know, just to factor into my original point, like, yeah, I don't think that, I think anime is like usually pretty granular when it comes to what we would consider like a coming of age story. Like, you know, you take something like Toradora, which like I think could be, some people could consider a coming of age story, although probably like in the latter half, like it's, you know, it's almost entirely a romantic comedy ish type thing. Or Fruits Basket would be another example of you know, there's elements of coming of age in that story, but certainly most of it has happened before the show started. But you know, it's like, you know, there's a million and one different examples I could point to, but like, you know, I don't feel like coming of age is necessarily like a great label for Mob.
He does grow up in some like key ways.
He does. I think. Yeah. I just, I don't know if coming of age is the reason why he grows up.
It is kind of a little bit genre dodging that way though.
Yeah. Like I feel like the growing up that happens is like manual growing up as opposed to automatic growing up.
We got two more small ones. So oh, here's a good one. Which character would you like to see more of? Is there an underrated side character you think deserves more screen time?
Sarazawa.
Onigawara.
Think Mark, you're right. We should get more of him. But I'm with KI.
I
also
take
really
an Onigawara
like,
spin-off.
I want to see like another a few slice of life episodes of Reagan's office with Sarazawa and everybody.
There is a Reagan spinoff.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
Is it after season two or is it between the seasons?
Well, okay, so there's the Reagan OVA, which is technically just a creative way for them to recap season one to get people on board season two with some new footage, but there is a Reagan, like full-on Reagan spinoff manga that I don't know anything about other than the fact that it exists.
Thus spake Reagan Arakata.
Exactly.
Oh my god. Wow. So I definitely would love to see more Reagan. Can't get enough of Reagan. He's great.
Definitely an underrated side character.
I mean, why do people hate him? I like, or also like, I get the biggest kick out of Ekubo. Like, I love Dimple a lot. Yeah,
he is so fun.
Like, just following him around would be fun. I think the underrated side characters for me that I'd like more done with are the ladies. I mean, Tsubomi and Misato.
Yeah,
like, I agree.
Love to see more of them. They're really fascinating, and there's a lot there. They just don't get the screen time that that the others get.
Yeah, if I had to say one complaint about Mob Psycho, it'd be more girls.
Yeah,
yeah. There's not really any that are
plot significant.
Yeah, there's not really any that are like super worth mentioning if we're talking about just like an overarching.
There's two in the seventh subdivision, but again, they're not like given a ton of screen time. You know, the one gets her fight with Mob, the other has her fight with Mob off screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then runs crying to the one that gets beaten later.
Yes.
Yeah.
She kind of also has her fight off screen a little bit.
Yeah.
I just am remembering. Yeah. That's...
Yep.
I like all the female characters that are there. I just wish there were more, or we got to see more of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the last one, last Twitter question says, if you were an Esper, what specialty do you think you would have? Plant powers, telekinesis, mind reading?
I don't want mind reading. That sounds awful.
Yeah.
Yikes. No, I'm reading a Haruki Murakami book called Dance, 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 and there's a psychic in that, and she can not exactly, well, so I kind of vaguely mind read, more like really intensely feel people's emotions and kind of visualize their thoughts, and it really takes a toll on her. So much so that she has to, like, become kind of an asshole and close herself off a lot of the time, or she'll just be in pain. So no mind reading for me.
I feel like I would say telekinesis, but then I feel like I would, like, very quickly become basically, like, Duke Harkonnen from Dune and just, like, never walk anywhere and just float.
Oh, man. Always. That would rule.
Yeah, that's no.
Like, if you had force powers, you would never walk across the room to grab stuff.
I want the teleportation one, actually.
That's
nice. Oh my god.
So cool.
God, it was cool.
I love how they animate that.
I think my real answer, though, is probably pyrokinesis. I always thought that super cool psychic power that's not necessarily limited to mob, but I think it is absolutely the coolest power that is used in mob, because like the whole fight between the fire dude from the 7th Division and Teruki is probably my favorite fight in the entire show.
It looks just
the
way it looks incredible.
Is absolutely insane.
The teleportation is the one I'm feeling pretty strong about.
Yeah,
also, anyone else just get so mad at Shibazaki? Like the way to just kill everyone is to grab them and teleport into the air and drop them. And he like did it once with Teru, but then he kicked them into a building. I'm like, no! No, he was dead, and you saved him by kicking him into
transport them to like the very bottom of the ocean for like a split second and then teleport out.
Yeah,
or anything. Yeah, teleport them onto the top of Mount Everest and then teleport them and then teleport away.
It really didn't explain like how far it ranged, so potentially could have been.
I laughed a lot at the scene where he like sort of realizes what he's actually up against with mob and is just like, nope, I'm done.
Yeah.
Fuck this.
Yeah.
Like, bye. See ya.
When he said like, oh, I wasn't in it for world domination, I was just having fun. And I was like, you had fun hurting people? You're
like,
gonna
die. That's such a specific like shonen anime trope.
It is.
Like the person who's like in it for fun, and the fun they mean is like killing
chaos,
people or
right,
hurting people or torturing people or whatever, but they never take it so far as just them getting defeated and just being like, you know, I don't want to get beaten up anymore, so fuck this, and then just they're gone forever. That's like
we never see him again, huh?
yeah nope, never. That's it. He's done.
Well For our final thoughts on Mob Psycho, who would you recommend the show to?
Almost everyone.
Basically.
I would probably couch this as like a lower tier, like intermediate show. I don't know if this is the first anime I would tell somebody to watch.
Yeah.
I agree.
But maybe like the fifth.
Hmm.
I think it's pretty meaty. I also do think that there are some certain aspects of Japanese culture that maybe you have to be indoctrinated to a bit before you get to this one.
They would help, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always the thing I'm most conscious with recommending anime to people, too, is, like, what is most universal? And I do think that there are certain things that you kind of would have to get used to before getting to Mob, but it's not, you know... It's not some high. It's not like Rakugo where I'm like,
yeah.
It should be like the 100th show you watch.
That's like an 11 on the scale of 1 to 10.
Yeah. Yes. As much as I like that show, it is for somebody that doesn't watch anime and doesn't know anything about Japan, fucking impenetrable.
Totally. Yeah.
Whereas this is, I think, fine once you've watched a few.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As far as anime fans go, I think I'd recommend it to anybody except maybe with the exception of young people, really
very
young,
young children, yeah, yeah.
kids, yeah. yeah.
Not a show just I let my children watch. Brutal it gets
sometimes.
Mm. No,
yeah, it's just a good show.
Yeah, I would echo what people are saying that I think most seasoned anime fans, like, if I mean, unless I don't know, you just hate psychics or fighting like at all, then
or
maybe
ghosts
or yeah.
milk or milk. Though I don't really like milk, and you're lactose intolerant. You still That's like true. The show.
I
will say I guess... that this is another thing that I really appreciate that the show does is that shows that deal with spirits that are set in Japan very often get off on like crazy tangents about yokai.
Yeah.
And very often assume a level of knowledge of like the common yokai that maybe you know easy to assume in Japan, but for international viewers is completely unreasonable. And I don't think that is I'm not expecting shows to hold back on their mm-hmm. Japanese folklore because A, I love it because I do understand it, but B, you know, these are shows made in Japan for primarily Japanese audiences. Mm-hmm. But I do really appreciate that, like, the only thing they ever deal with in Mob is quote unquote evil spirits, which it is still like a fundamentally, I think, Japanese like understanding of like spirits and ghosts, because mm-hmm. like a lot of the ones that they fight in that show are like very specific, you know, like specifically lifted from Japanese folklore and like Shinto and all that. But they don't ever get like bogged down in like yokai and like what the fuck is the difference between a yokai and a spirit and a ghost. And like that's like the thing that like, you know, yokai sit in this weird middle ground between monsters and ghosts and spirits and like elementals.
Yes.
That is so hard to parse if it's not explained in a very specific way. That I'm really glad they never got into until literally the last, 5 minutes of the last episode of the first season where they hunt the Tsuchinoko.
Yeah.
And even that's more cryptid.
I think this, for a certain kind of person, I think this could be, their first or one of their first anime.
It could be.
If you, watch a lot of Netflix animations.
I wouldn't do it only because I'm like, it's gonna be mostly downhill from here, my dear.
Yeah. Let them enjoy having something good to look forward to.
Especially if, you're recommending mostly modern anime to them. It's just you're not gonna find basically anything else like this.
Yeah.
And especially if they really like it, I'd feel terrible. Like, I'd feel like I just want to work somebody up to it only to not give them unrealistic expectations for what TV anime is.
That's fair.
All right. Well, I think that does it for this episode, at least. Do you guys want to plug your projects?
Yeah, where can people find you?
Where can they find you on the online?
If you want them to find you.
mine's real short. You can just go to onoanime.moe or onoanime.com. We've got all the links to basically everything I do on the front page. That's it.
So I'm on Twitter at the Subtle Doctor. No caps, no spaces. Like I mentioned, I do an anime podcast and YouTube thing called Warui Desho, WARUI. DESHOU. It'll be in the show notes, but if you Google that and then Twitter or YouTube or SoundCloud, you can find our stuff in all those places. I also recently started to do a wrestling podcast called Grappalicious. If you Google that, grapple and then ICIOUS, and you can find that. That's a fun little thing I'm doing with my friend David. And so, that's where you can find me in the online.
And as always, you can find us at Anime Is Lit Pod on Twitter. And if you want to ask us questions, send us an email, animeislitpod@gmail.com.
Take care of yourselves.
Yeah. I know we have been on hiatus for a while, but we have a lot of episodes planned and we're back now. So expect a lot more Anime Is Lit episodes.
Yeah.
I guess you could say I'm back. The John Wick of podcasting.
Can we put that on our review page that I'm going to build?
Absolutely. Put it on your album art for the podcast. Like, just put it as like a box quote and then credit it to me.
Excellent.
All right.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us on this great episode. And thank you to both you and Mark. Sorry, it's late. Thank you, Mark and Subs, for joining us on this episode.
I'll answer.
We just hit the 5-hour mark on recording for this, so it's a bit late. It's even later for you too.
Still not the longest one.
Nope.
Nope.
Well, I'm going to enjoy editing this one.
I am so grateful to be a part of it. Thanks for asking me to be on. I love your podcast and always have. So it's a pure pleasure, and I think we were able to. To do justice to the great anime, and I had a really good time doing this with y'all. I always do.
I had a great time too.
Thank you so much for having me on, and it's always amazing to get to talk to y'all. And Mob Psycho 100 is one of the greatest anime ever made. So,
of
all time, I'm completely comfortable saying that.
Embrace it.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
Take care of yourselves.
Bye.
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 この世界の片隅で今を生きる僕らは涙を越えて光の誘い